Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis tonight, of national politics, commentary featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, Ralph Connor of the Heartland Institute, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking American, the mayor of the Coast to Coast, Michigan. Tonight featuring commentary by business consultant John Challenger, community turnaround specialist Dan Swinney, and Ralph Connor of the Heartland Institute. We will program tonight coming to you from our home base, Michigan, in Sirius XM studios on Chicago's Beyond Beltway's Ben Stewart tells us phone lines are now the impact of the debacle in Detroit, 723-8289, across the United States.
In crisis after crisis during recent months, we've seen how national headlines can impact American towns and cities. The housing crisis has sent home sales to their lowest level since 1991, and turmoil at the big three automakers, GM, Ford, and Chrysler, is being felt in towns across the U.S. The New York Times on Saturday reported mounting debts at one dealership in Quincy, Florida. That dealer is not alone. The National Automobile Dealers Association predicts about 900 of America's more than 20,000 new car dealers will go out of business this year. That number could head into the thousands next year. According to the Labor Department, 20,000 employees at dealerships lost their jobs in October alone. While auto executives ask for a bailout from Washington, the Times reports that federal cash might come too late.
Is happening
for some dealers.
In
this
your
points
life
to a widely felt national impact from
tonight
the auto
we ask
crisis.
The question,
cities
what
like
should
Lansing
people,
and Flint, Michigan, centers of the auto industry, will almost certainly see job losses.
Their
and with dealerships
future.
Closing
John
nationwide,
Challenger is with us. John,
Detroit
a Harvard graduate,
other cities
and
as well.
One of the country's leading
extent?
Job
how
outplacement experts.
Change those
companies
cities
hire
and
you
the lives
to
of
deal
who
when they're about to have massive layoffs.
From beyond the Beltway,
what advice would you give to people listening to the program? And joining us now from his home in Lansing, Michigan, is the mayor of that city. Verge Bernero. Mr. Bernero, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Each of them.
My pleasure, Bruce.
For
thanks for having me.
Let us begin
well, right now,
by
if you've just been laid off or have lost your job
and that is,
somewhere recently,
if the big three
you need to get a fast
don't get
start.
That
you need
bailout
to be in the job
from,
market.
Washington.
You cannot take
what
this holiday season
view,
off as so many do. In fact,
city,
think about it.
And
if
how
some of your competitors
itself.
Want those same
well,
jobs as you are
dramatic.
Taking time
it
off,
will be catastrophic.
You are looking
it will
hard.
Be an economic
you have an
tsunami,
but it is a very tough time right now.
And, of course, for Lansing.
There are
we've been trying to diversify our economy.
And it looks like that's going to go on well into 2009.
I've always
if you're that
in
company
politics, I've heard our
that is thinking
governors
about how am I going to manage through this very difficult
economy. And then, of course, when I became
business,
mayor 3 years ago,
certainly you want
my top priority was to continue to try to diversify.
Before you take that move
we call it the three-legged stool of our economy,
around,
which is basically hires capital campus,
where the state capital
go into the
market
we have
new
Michigan
people
State
who
University
have
just down the road, that's the campus, and then, of course, the
hires
General Motors.
The people may be on into their next jobs that you had there before.
Dan Swinney also joins us. He is the executive director of the Center for Labor and Community Research.
Nice to have you
back with us on
the
program.
Industry,
you're dealing primarily with people on the lower rung
so
of the ladder. What should they be doing?
For your listeners.
Well, actually, I'm dealing with both the lower rung of the ladder as well as the higher
rung. Because we are diversifying. It would be devastating.
You know, like Winston Churchill said, if you're in hell, you've got
to
keep going.
The whole country.
If you have a period of difficulty and you master it,
there's a reason why the Chrysler Company years ago was bailed out 30 years ago by the federal government. And by the way, that loan was fully paid back. That was a good deal for taxpayers. They were paid back early and they were paid back in full. 30 years of productivity.
What is
the
opportunity as you see?
The auto industry
has opportunity is to take a fundamental shift in our economy. For the last 30 years,
this is an industry worth saving, and I think people should consider that 7.5 job ripple effect. There's 3 billion jobs that will be affected across this country. It could push us from a recession
to
a depression. There are a lot of reasons to save this vital aspect of manufacturing in this country.
Need to recognize that
there are many people listening to this interview this evening. In fact, in the first hour of our program, a couple of the guests
we still have a competitive advantage
with me this evening
making complex
suggested that
like
maybe the best
machines,
thing that would happen
like robots,
would be that they like, would there would be a reorganization,
wind turbines,
there would be a bankruptcy.
In our country, our
and that really
focus on
that unless there is
Ralph
radical
of the
changes within the operation,
Ralph, nice
by the management of these companies,
what advice would you
these
be
companies
offering
are going
to
nowhere?
Whoever
and
is listening,
money that may come to you in January.
Number one, we have to maintain a confidence in the free market system.
I ask you and your listeners to carefully consider what I have to say.
People have to first of all
unless
we improve
the
confidence
seven,
meter
may as well
and get people to believe that the system is repairable and that we can
company
invest once again in new
there,
industries
the
that will be growth
now,
industries,
not
just the green
have
technologies,
mistakes,
but industries that are going to go to expansion like telecom, the media, and other corporations.
I've been to Korea.
We have a process called creative
destruction
where some of the older industries
sister city,
subsiding,
South
but we have
Korea.
To have an investment in new industries and have this industry identified so that people can target their training toward the new industries and growth industries in a free market system. I think that's the main point, is we have to realize the free market system is going to survive this whole
crisis. We have, do you agree with that, John?
I do. I mean, we need certainly to have strong economic system, but we do need to have more regulation. We've seen some of the problems that occurred.
Much of which I agree
so
with, by the way,
without any rules,
but our companies
people,
are going
for example,
greener. I ask
you get
to
mortgages,
our companies
you know, without
have been
any
turning
kind
the corner.
Of,
do you know GM makes more hybrid vehicles today than any other company on the planet? GM
were.
Outsold
so
Toyota
we need to
last year.
Recognize
GM
that we
made the
went
motor trend
a little bit too far
in the Cadillac CTS right here in Lansing,
freedom,
Michigan.
Now we need to get back
this is not your father's automobile
building new industries.
These companies have turned the corner. If you have not taken a good look at Ford, Chrysler, and GM,
skills are of our people,
giving
them the education to go and get the kinds of jobs
they are not
future.
In the final hour.
So,
what put them
sure,
under was
we
the whopping blow from Wall Street.
System.
It was the credit crunch
we have that already.
That really put them in a bad way. They were changing,
that.
Becoming cleaner and greener,
your suggestion,
and doing so
Dan,
many
about,
things differently.
Preparing, you know, the
Mr.
New
Mayor,
employees.
We have callers on the line. Let's go to Tim in Redding, California.
Well, I think, I mean,
listening
all, I
to us on KQMS. Go ahead. You're on the air, Tim.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I believe, having been a member of a union before,
I think we need to
start the union and the big three, the management, are both to blame. Reason being is they wrote it, they were riding on their economic success for many, many years. So people forget that management has to okay the contract as well as the union. So the union is not strictly to blame. However, if you recall, a guy by the name of Edward Deming many years ago in the early 1950s brought in total quality management and Kaizen, continuous improvement, to the big three. They laughed at him. He brought it over to Japan and they embraced that business model, and that's why they're the number one auto industry automaker in the world. Is because
way,
they believe in continuous improvement, total quality management, make things better, continue to improve. We did not do that.
Math.
We got fat, sassy, and arrogant about our production, and this is where we are today, and I do not believe we should bail these people out. There is no way my tax dollars should go to bail out a company that is poorly managed and misrun.
Let's let the mayor respond. Go ahead, Mayor.
Well, Tim makes a valid point with Deming, of course, but he's dead wrong as far as the bailout.
But also management
I suppose it's a good investment to bail out AIG for $150 billion
with no strings
attached, or some of these other Wall Street concerns. You know, Wall Street and Washington, their two biggest products are hysteria and hot air. The automobile company actually produces something. These are real people all across the country that produce real products that are in demand. The fact of the matter is,
because what we found in our research is that you have, like in Chicago, we have 6,000
They did not judge their competition.
Now they face the pressure
the
now
way they should
retire.
Have. They neglected the competition. Everybody did. The big three, they put themselves where
every
they
year
are, including the union. You guys should have
streamlined.
You guys should have been more
supply,
successful in judging
let's
the competition and
let's
the consumer
the skills
was buying. And you guys
jobs.
Didn't do that.
We have 5,000 graduates. Every year, 5,000 graduates.
Group is so much better and so much more worthy of a bailout. The fact of the matter is the automobile company,
same thing exists.
The executives
Toledo,
have made mistakes.
Detroit,
there's a corporate culture
New
there,
York,
like a lot of corporate culture. But I'll tell you something, Tim. You and a lot of other Americans who have questions about this. Let me tell you something.
To up on
the
that
number
1-800-723-8029.
Taking
America's
being
political
the last
pulse,
great patriotic
coast
company
to coast
and
border
to
border.
Country.
Tonight, talking about your economic future. What can you do to make it better? 1-800-723-8029.
Mr. Mayor, stay on the line. We want to continue our conversation. 1-800-723-8029. We have a fired up mayor of Lansing, Michigan, Mayor Bernero, and we'll hear from him when we roll on.
From Laguna
from
Beach,
California,
Boston,
California to Lansing, Michigan,
you're
listening to Be on the Beltway. The mayor of Lansing, Michigan, joins us, Verge Bernero, and Mr. Mayor, our guest in the studio here in Chicago.
What you can be doing to
Dan Swinney has a question for
economic future
yeah,
of your
mayor,
areas.
And
Ralph Conner of the Heartland Institute.
I also support the idea of a
I was agreement wholeheartedly with what the gentleman said about looking
bailout.
For school
I think
alternatives,
an opportunity
particularly
for public
charter
investment
schools
if
that
the terms
are publicly
right.
owned schools
I believe
that provide innovative curriculum that tie it into corporate America. But we need more corporate tax-supported scholarships and other types of school choice vehicles that provide for public and private schools. Because only then can you really get more interaction with the economy and the school training system.
John, when you're talking to corporate CEOs,
what do like they a very say about the quality and I appreciate of, that. Of workmen that they're dealing with? I wouldn't have any problem with any of that. Of, you know, I think the mistake that the federal government has made, and I think that they've lost some confidence
and also what role, if any, they have in
is with these
improving
bailoffs,
education
and that's what I'll call them, of the Wall Street concerns.
Well,
no
certainly, I mean, they need a workforce
that
has the right kinds of basic skills for their entry-level jobs, so they care about the communities they're locating. They want to have a strong professional community, which gets back to education, higher education, that gives communities, that give people, students, strong motivation to move from college education to graduate school education is very important. So every CEO is very much but care about the quality of the people they have to hire in that local community. That draws people, companies, to the best communities with the strongest school system.
These are real companies that produce real things.
During any campaign,
you
hear about the big bad boogeyman
in
our American business people. We're taking jobs and shipping them overseas. If you're running an American corporation, how do you fight against that? How do you stop that? Is there any way that you can stop that?
Well, certainly not totally, because you're competing as an American businessman in the global market. So you're going
to
go out certainly over the next generation and try to tap in to those marketplaces around the world. It's going to be one of the keys to your future, as many companies.
Mr. Mayor, John Challenger is here. He's an outplacement consultant. He's got a question or comment for you.
So my concern, Mayor, is what do we do is going to be part of it. We're in the same position 3 months from now or 6 months from now. So also, if we need to tap into this market company here and develop the money, whether it's bailout or investment, and we find the same that we're in the same position 3 months from now,
the dollar had been very helpful.
How do we handle it then? Do
we
say America got more money, or so is it
jobs?
Are you willing to say we're going to do it once,
and
it's the last time if the situation arises again?
We have 13,000 publicly traded companies.
Just
those
can't get past
the, world,
the
all
competition
the
right now the way
we
they're
have
structured.
8 million
in the same position
privately held
next
companies.
Summer.
They're typically
what do we
locally
do
owned or anchored
well,
in their local community.
Well, we simply cannot afford to fail. So Dan's right. It's got to be
manufacturing
right.
That I'm talking about.
Look, what do we do? What if we're in the same position 6 months from now?
Look, I'm not just speaking of the Atlantic Michigan, believe it or not, and I'm not just speaking as the son of an auto worker. My dad retired after many years from GM. But look, I'm speaking as an American here. I don't believe we can afford to let our manufacturing prowess
they are desperate
to this
to have a
degree. And I also don't believe that our companies are competing
have the
on an equal
competence.
Basis with other
not high school
private
diploma.
Sector companies.
You're not competing. Answering my question.
I'm
you're
answering
not
your question. Work. No, I'm answering
including
your question. The question
science,
is we cannot afford
thinking.
To fail. The question
well,
is
what if it does come?
So it's not just economic security, it's national security. Let's not forget that the auto industry
maybe not the biggest,
an important part of the
are now doing some very creative work, not only in terms of
World War II. I don't believe that we can just allow our manufacturing prowess to fall by the wayside.
And how does the American
God
worker compare with workers in other nations
that we can rely on Korea or Japan
right
or China
today.
To produce that?
Well, maybe we should turn them into military companies.
Working today or
maybe if that's the argument, then
world.
We should turn them into military companies instead of car companies.
And that's the big problem.
Well, and look, what Dan is talking about is turning them into transportation companies. And you know what? We need transportation. We need better rail lines. You know, we don't just need better highways. We need better mass transit.
Now, Ralph Connor is here. He's with the Heartland Institute, Mayor, and he thinks that there's been way too much emphasis on manufacturing. He thinks American manufacturing
so
is dead. Ralph?
Well, I don't think it's dead, but what I'm saying
well
is there's
national,
a process among
the new government has
economists
to
what
called
is
creative
being
destruction
done to,
which
to
ask us to look at the reality of where is the marketplace going with this?
Going
is it
to
going
American
to require that
from
all
the
automobile
the
companies become war
ladder.
To the government?
And what
are they
going to
be job-creating enterprises?
Are
we going
to
be in a situation where they can only make it
I think
with
you
government
have to
subsidies? Are we going to have to say, let's make
ideas,
a Volt electric car and then pay every American
$7,500
if they'll buy
design,
one?
But
what happened to the market that says, well, Americans
and
want
it has
to buy
it
because it's a
labor agreement.
Americans want
to
buy it because it's competitive.
So
how do you make it competitive again?
Americans are behind in math and science.
Like you that helped put us in this position.
Nothing new
about you guys that wanted
when they do the international test, American students come up in the rear on math and science. So you have to make math and science more relevant to children, not
only in the inner city and the African-American community. You have to bring in entrepreneurial alternative schools. You have to bring in public and private schools and give the corporate sector a vested interest by making tax-supported scholarships available to students who attend schools that aren't generally public or charter schools that may have more innovative ways to tie in directly with corporate America with their curriculum.
What exactly does that society do? What's the goal?
Well, that's a society that fosters communication between Japanese Americans,
I think that in the last 30 years, this whole economy
citizens as
well, allowed the casino operators,
and
the gamblers,
in Japan.
The betters,
and it's
to take
a global organization,
our economic culture,
that looks towards creating strong
bonds. Now we have an opportunity to intervene
what is happening in Japan
with government,
that they're doing
labor, and
better
working
than
with
us.
Business and what we call a
and
high
frankly,
rate partnership
what are things
to
that
restructure
we're doing
these companies dramatically
them,
so they can compete
as
in the global
the
market as well as better serve our society.
That would be great. You know, but these
Japan
free marketeers
to us
will kill
and looks at our
me. You know, I've been to Korea. I was in Taiwan. They have national health care. And you can poo-poo it if you want. But, you know, that's a big part of what the UAW negotiated for, a big part of my life, an important part of my life that my dad and the UAW and GM provided for was excellent health care. And for that, they're supposed to be guilty for that. That makes them uncompetitive. Well, you better believe that's part of what makes them uncompetitive. Because in Japan and in Korea, they have national health care. It is not a concern. That Hyundai has to be worried
Japan
about. And the environmental regulations are not as tough as they are here.
Towards,
and when those free trade arrangements were negotiated,
teamwork,
all of that should have been worked into the deal. We should have been competing on a level playing field, but our standard of living has been exported continuously. And now you want to kill the auto industry and blame the UAW. Well, you know what? The UAW recently made historic concessions, and we have a long-time history here in Lansing of the UAW working hard and working with GM and using some of that Deming philosophy. That's how you get to the Motor Trend Car of the Year. And by the way, the Malibu, the Chevy Malibu was the North American car of the year. And by the way, the Insurance Institute of Highway Safety just came out with their studies of the safest vehicles. And guess what? The big three dominated the top of the list. So we're producing great cars. We're producing greener cars than ever before. Don't tell me that we're in the death row. We were just on the way to turning the corner, becoming cleaner and greener when this walloping blow was dealt to us by Wall Street. The Wall Street wizards are what brought us here, and now they still want
to
sting the praises of the free market, which doesn't even exist on
the
worldwide level.
Let's go to Patrick in Fresno, California.
Outside the
listen
country
to us on
and then
KMJ.
Make it cheaper for Americans to purchase.
Hi,
a win
for
the American
my
consumer.
Call.
Dan, you were
I'm an engineer.
Yeah, I think
been
that,
in the
yeah.
industry
I think
a
the Japanese
years,
labor force is quite organized.
And
it's true for the European workforce.
It's
one of our greatest competitors. In this country, in Chicago, for example, there's a Chicago Federation of Labor that we were working with that did
this
short-term
thinking. And I think a lot of it is actually
on
driven
the
by system, Wall Street.
Identified the huge problems we have in
Wall Street is constantly pressuring companies.
So I think labor is not the source
what are you
of the problem.
Do
labor is always
a
reflection of management.
Up.
Labor has to be part of the
What are you
going to
do to make money this
and,
year?
And if you have labor involved, both organized and unorganized, you really can then have
Street,
the chance to have
it seems
real
like
innovation.
Going back a couple of decades
I mean, like in the school system.
Now it's chronic,
I work a lot in the school system.
The
teachers' unions are not the source of the problem in education. They're simply a reflection of the challenges that management
faces.
They can really be part of the solution. In fact, one of the most powerful organizations
and Enron,
in this for rebuilding our economy because we are in a knowledge-based economy.
They
represent more people involved in education than anybody else.
You know, Wall Street
well,
seems
I
like they drive a lot of these
Yes,
problems.
I do. The Friedman
now,
Foundation
them,
for Educational Choice
I think individual
recently did a study
drive a lot
on
of
Maryland,
problems
and
too.
They found that 46% of the parents, this is right next to D.C., wanted to have the alternative of private schools as an option. And so, yes, the school teachers union is one of the
so
most powerful entities that control the whole
the
process, and it has been a part of the problem, just
like
government is oftentimes part of the problem.
Why is it
profit,
part of the problem, in your view?
You
well, primarily because
it
inflates the cost of public
years,
education, while at the same time protecting
Dan Swinney's got a response to that.
Teachers
Patrick,
who may not be
the
doing
the
job.
I think,
and it's the same thing. If the focus of an Obama presidency is to be on improving schools, it has to be on making things better for parents and students, as
who have
concentrating on what's for the best interest of teachers.
The UAW should be given equity shares in that company but for their concessions they gave because they have a long-term interest in the development
of the things that you've mentioned.
Same as the government.
Isn't
again, I don't think the government should be throwing money at this problem.
Bad teachers.
But if it makes an investment,
I think that there is a process for that, but once again, the unions control the process. The same thing as merit pay. If, as suggested by many of the Democrats, that number one, I think the caller needs to reconsider the capital gains issue. Those taxes should actually be cut.
Then you're not achieving anything if you still leave the process in control of the same people that are not delivering a quality product.
From your perspective of corporate America, looking at public education, where would you put the blame?
So I think those things need
well,
to be
certainly,
reconsidered.
Mr. Mayor, look 30 at the Chicago
seconds
public
in closing
schools.
Remarks to
now,
you.
I'm not speaking for corporate America. I might look at the Chicago public schools
well,
and say
right line,
this
right
is a system that needs to have more merit-based look at
this isn't just
examination
a Lansing problem,
of how teachers
a Michigan
perform.
Problem.
We've
this
seen
is
that
America's
use of metrics
this is the
of
heartland.
Examining
you know,
people's performance,
of
worker performance that's gone through corporate America over the last
issues,
several decades.
The
it's critical to the success
unlike
of our companies over the next decade, so it needs to be brought into the education system as well.
The phone number is 1-800-723-8029 is the phone number, and also if you'd like to email us a comment, our new email address is Bruce at BeyondTheBeltway.com. Mr. Mayor, we're going to interrupt you, and I'm going to suggest the next time that they go to Washington,
we'll take your email messages as well
as
take
you with
phone calls.
Take you with them because you're terrific. The mayor of Lansing, Michigan, Virge Bernero, has been our guest. I'm Bruce Dumont coming to you live from Chicago. 1-800-723-8289 is the phone number. From Spokane, Washington, to Youngstown, Ohio,
Texas,
you're listening
Seattle,
to Beyond
Washington.
The Beltway.
You're
thank you for
Beyond the Beltway
on America's Great on America's Radio Stations, and also as well as
XM
America's
Satellite Radio, POTUS 130,
and Satellite Radio Company,
Satellite Radio, Sirius 110,
POTUS 110.
That's also under
on
POTUS,
Sirius.
So it's POTUS 130
also
on XM
radio.
And Sirius
on
110.
130.
You're listening to us on
Sirius,
and again, we'd like to hear from you this evening.
Tonight,
if you're listening to us on
terrestrial
radio,
you're probably hearing us
for the
first time in America,
and this is
joining us tonight,
show.
Dan Swinney is here. Dan Swinney is the executive director
and it's nice to have you
of
with
the
us
Center
tonight.
For
John
Labor
Challenger
and Community
He is
Research.
The CEO
and,
of Challenger's
Ray and
Christmas.
Touted.
That is
a
global
outplacement
consultancy
for the Austin
pioneered outplacement as an
Academy.
Employer paid
that is being developed in
the
city of Chicago.
He's
Connor
a graduate.
Also joins us.
Harvard
he is
University.
With the Heartland Institute.
He is active in
and John
the
Challenger
President's
joins us. John is the chief executive officer of Challenger
of the
Ray and Christmas. And that is a leader in workplace labor
Japan,
economic
Society,
issues,
and we've got lots
of
calls on the line.
1-800-723-8289.
Executive
Let's
Director
go to line one.
Center
Muhammad,
for Labor and Community
to
Research,
in Lake in the Hills, Illinois. Go ahead, Muhammad.
Of, new
good evening,
innovative
guys.
Ways
very
to
nice
deal
to
with
this,
the issues
great topic.
Of manufacturing in the inner cities of
quick
America.
Quick question for you, Dan. You were talking about replicating this effort of Austin Polytechnic throughout the country. I would like you to expand a little bit more on the efforts, local efforts that are being made over here for
the
CMRC initiative. That you and
Heartland
I involved in. Thank you.
Which is a libertarian thing.
Yeah, I mean, already Potter, in Chicago, we've been approved to start one more
manager,
school
and also,
next September
about a time
called
he was
Chicago
mayor
Academy
of a
for
small
Advanced
town,
Technology.
Maywood, Illinois,
we have two other schools underway, one on the south side and one in Rogers Park.
What did you do about
early stage efforts to replicate.
Well, as the mayor of Lansing,
from the very beginning, I knew that we had to have five or six of these schools.
How do you get into the school?
And we have to realize that.
Well, we're doing it through the Chicago Renaissance 2010 process.
What it
We've been a
to
partner
be.
With Chicago Public
and
Schools,
that a
which
lot
has
of
opened
jobs
up the ability to sort of competitively
and
bid
the telecom economy,
to establish new
and
schools.
And we have to start looking for ways to bring into new industries, service industries. And
now
so
we're
what did you do in Maywood?
Track record.
Don't you have a lot of hospitals there?
Well,
by the way, we have leaders
attract,
from the California
the
Teachers Association
not really in Maywood
Monday.
Proper.
They've studied our model from
Maywood
the NEA,
what
and they, in fact, are real advocates for this approach.
More
want to replicate this school
in order to bring
in
more
California,
sales taxes
with
so
the
lower
participation
real estate
of the union.
Rate.
And including both good compensation, but also good
performance.
So people who are listening around the country who are maybe involved in school organizations or school groups or mayors of communities, if they want to know more about it, they can go to your website.
Absolutely. We're prepared. We've got
to
provide assistance at all levels. We're going to be operating schools.
Existing industry,
we're going to be providing professional
deal
development
with
for
other
teachers.
Regional communities
we're developing curriculum.
To try to play
yeah, we're moving to a larger scale. And we have to.
See if we
when Barack Obama said that he wanted
break
to make
at the top
your
of the hour
school
before we brought
a,
Mayor
a model,
conversation, there was
has
a,
there been
a good
discussions with the president-elect? At what point, how do you take
that
huge plum that he has given you? And you've known Barack Obama
Dan,
for a number of years.
That manufacturing
how do you keep
well,
that connection
John,
now that he's about to go off to Washington?
Putting all
well, you know, his staff
the,
kept connection with us. When they heard about the efforts to even start the school before it even started,
I don't think
they heard about the design.
But I think he's,
again, the design is linking students in the Austin community, again, African American community.
Make that challenge, Mr. Challenger.
I don't think
that the 21st century is going to be about manufacturing in the U.S. I do think
the
manufacturing
itself,
its strongest area of focus needs to be on high-tech manufacturing, knowledge jobs and manufacturing. But our economy, in fact, even today, with what's happening in the markets, is telling us where the future is going to be. The kinds of companies that are doing well despite the recession right now, the industries that are doing well are healthcare, energy, education,
John, I want to go back to basically your
international global business.
Our
economy in the 21st century has to, and maybe technology as well. So our economy,
when those decisions are made,
and where education needs to go,
first of all, how much
towards those industries, because
there's an employee
the market's
generally
telling
but receive
wasn't
Dan, Dan, when there's about to be massive layoffs.
Energy
when a company is either going to go overseas or go out of business
defend that,
or move
defend
to another locale, even in the United
absolutely
States.
Right.
What's the lead time on getting that bad news
that
and preparing those employees for your transition efforts?
By law, there's the WARN notification.
That's where
companies have to give workers 60 days before they make the before they have to leave the organization. So most companies make the announcement. 60 days later, they may start to close their doors. They may close them all together, depending on what they do. So,
people
start their search
for what size companies and what type of layoffs.
Over 50 workers, any company over 50 workers, then has to make that notification. Then the people, usually in most companies,
and it can be done in the United States at U.S. wages.
Absolutely,
is this expansion
usually when they're working hard to make too much happen, then so searches start in earnest once they've left.
Well, I'm talking about both.
One of the discussions that everybody in the country has been talking about for the last several months is what happens to General Motors, whether or not there's going
to
be a bailout by the federal government or
not.
Do you support a bailout for GM?
But, you know, we're in the city of Chicago.
I don't support a bailout. I think that the company needs to be reorganized. If we put money into it now and then we're in the same place 6 months from now, we've not made any gain. So I do think we have to stop and say, make this company, our car companies, ones that can compete in the world economy in the future. They have to
be a global leader.
It seems to me that they begin again and say, what's going to work? That means looking at all of the different ways. And we want to have that strong, high-tech manufacturing base. But think about healthcare. We're not talking really about makers of
they're going to have to be
MRI
making automobiles.
Certainly, they can take that technology and make other
millions
of
workers
going, large 50 vehicles.
Workers right now in the
but
in
the end result, seems to me they're going to need to be in that industry. The question is, can they reorganize
and biotech
come up with products that can compete in the world economy and come up with products that the government might need to buy?
These are clerical jobs. Ralph Connor, would you be bailing out if you were clerical?
No, I would vote that they should have to subscribe to the principles of reorganization under Chapter 11, like any other insolvent capitalist business. And I think that you have to take into account how they got to the point that they're in. The government played a role with the CAFE standards
as well as low skill.
And also the regulations. And also you have to look at the role of organized labor in that whole concept as well as to the entitlements, the pensions, the benefits. And you have to look at how the automobile industry in the United States became less competitive and less appealing to the consumer. You also have to look at the proposed remedies, such as saying we're going to have a new electric vehicle that's going to be subsidized at $7,500 a piece by the government. You know, government solutions of this nature have been proven not to work, and I think we have to look at more of a free market approach.
That
free market approach would entail
the
Chapter 11 and the reorganization under
that
has been solvent companies.
Dan, in your view, if you were in Congress, we should be voting to give up on the fact.
It depends on the terms. I think this is again represents a great opportunity, but
it can
still gotta get into the details.
Well,
in fact, we do nothing, or we just push them into Chapter 7 for reorganization. It's going to be disastrous.
Your point was that it's all about tourism and retail.
No,
but if you restructure it,
I think that there is an energy economy.
For example, in a dramatic way, reorganize, recognize, if you know,
jobs.
To me, if the terms are right,
green jobs in the sense that they're based upon creating.
We should recognize that investment, not as a bailout, not as welfare, but equity.
Whether it's electricity,
we should restructure, first of all, beginning at the board of directors.
Whether it's deep geothermal,
so we should bring in.
Offshore
Josh
drilling,
who I think is
in order
Obama's,
to say that we need more
of Treasury, who's an
domestic
in
oil supply.
The industry,
that's the challenge
of
the future.
Should
is
be on
the energy watershed.
We should put in Amory Lovins,
created
leading
not by wind
developer.
And solar.
I mean, we should be
because you're not going to have
developers.
That many jobs in
wind and solar. Even if you subsidize $150 billion, because they will generate less than 5 or 10% of the total energy needs of the United States.
Right now, you suggested, and everybody sort of alluded to. Are we in a situation where we really need free American automobile companies
anymore? So-called wind turbines.
I think should one of those companies be doing something else?
Finally realize once again, whose decision is that to make? I think that we're getting dangerously close to nationalizing the car industry. That's not what America is all about. We should let the market resolve its creative destruction. We should let them come up with ways to make the company solvent by making something that the American public wants to buy.
Barack Obama has talked about putting a campaign to talk about creating green jobs. What are green jobs, John?
Green jobs refer to new economy jobs.
Don't have these
conserve energy.
It
is
kind
of a generic name.
The healthcare industry,
just
come
like
up
we
with
build
an auto
green buildings,
industry.
Green
that's what happened in the 20th century. Is
but,
that
everybody wanted to buy cars.
Now we have
industry,
a whole population that wants
se,
to buy healthcare. So the more people
jobs that
we put into healthcare, the more people then have access to healthcare. So it does seem to me the 21st century is going to be a lot more in the U.S. about the healthcare industry than it is going to be about the auto industry.
One other thing, too, all the help that we give to Toyota, Honda, and Nissan,
there's also jobs making
parts
for wind turbines.
And recently, I know Honda made a big splash in Indiana.
In Illinois,
of course, Toyota in San Antonio and down
in
Mississippi.
Renewable energy portfolios in Illinois.
And all that they've done in the past years,
25%
it seems to be okay to go out and give them low-interest loans.
There's
and,
a multi-billion dollar
property tax abatements and
we now have European companies
to pay for
wind turbines
worker retraining
or
headquarters. And so on and so forth.
And those kinds of jobs associated
I really find
with that
it hard to understand why we can't swallow, you know, trying to help a Ford, GM, or Chrysler when it's okay for these people who have a lot of cash reserves on hand to be getting such.
Let's go to Matt on line three listening to us in Chicago.
It does seem to me that the auto companies ought to be going to those
Matt,
local governments, you know, and saying, you know, how,
three,
you, what can
you
do, you know,
if not,
to help us?
To
we want to come build
in
your area. We're going to create jobs, and we're going to build
on WLS.
You know, auto plants
good,
that,
evening,
that American, you know, that produce cars that Americans want
to
buy.
Yeah, they could be building
the
these
that leave
cars in Japan and Korea. They came to the United States. Granted, they may have gotten some boost from the local economy, but they're making cars, and those cars are costing less to build than they were in Detroit. So who's the bad guy here?
The whole notion of
you
know, trading
Phil,
carbon credits and you know, using science
so
in a
we'll
kind of a pernicious way to drive businesses out of the country.
1-800-723-8289.
You know, but
we've got lots more callers,
I've
including
been a small
those on the road. Listening
and
to
had
the
had
a, from
I'm a dentist.
Coast,
I had a dental
hygienist
that was just horrible with patients. So we finally let her go after about a year.
From Boise, Idaho, Birmingham, Alabama, you're listening to Beyond the Bell. Before we take another call, let me just make a correction. John Challenger is the past president
of the Department of Professional Regulations, claiming we have a dirty office, so they come by and inspect your Sharps containers and all stuff.
Time,
all sorts
lunch,
of nonsense. And I have
sushi or
go downtown
meet.
Be interviewed.
Let's go to calls.
Nothing
let's go to our friend
it,
Crosby. Listen to us in Birmingham, Alabama, on WAPI, where there's probably still dancing
okay,
in the streets because
we're out of time. We've got to run to
Bama
the
really
segment.
Rolled.
Thanks for calling 1-800-723-8289.
Tide rolled yesterday over in Atlanta.
My brother
Bruce thanks
for
being with us tonight.
Alabama, back in the 60s. Still floating.
Houston went back in Chicago. 1-800-723-8289 is the phone number to call in just a moment. But John, I want to go back to the question I asked at the beginning of the show, and that is, what should people, communities, and companies be doing to sort of deal with the future and try to secure the future?
That state, I'm sure there probably wasn't anybody on the roads
in Alabama
yesterday when that came.
Business owner asked up on the show tonight, and I'm sure we probably have several hundred of them listening to the program. They're looking at the economy. What should they be thinking about right now insofar as
so
not only planning their futures, but also dealing with their employees.
Well, I think most companies right now, business owners, are thinking about how can I last through this period, this economic difficulty. What can I do to keep my costs down? What can I do to look for new customers, new markets to go into that cost me a lot of money? It is a period of time in a recession where you kind of hunker down and you wait out what's going on. If you're not able to do that, then you've got to take harder action. And that we see companies start with in terms of cutting costs. They might cut some of their perks that they're offering. They might cut their hours of the people before they have to go through something like a layoff.
How much leeway do they have to cut benefits and cut hours and things like that before they run into maybe federal or some governmental regulation that says you basically can't do that?
imposed by the state.
Well, they certainly
can
cut their perks as much as they need. They can look at ways of cutting costs in lots of other areas of their business. It's not just focused on employees. But companies have the right to do what they need to do to make their businesses survive.
And when you're called into a company where there's going to be massive layoffs, is it a series of one-on-one conversations do you have? Is it group sessions? And how large a group do you have your initial discussion with and basically have to tell them that the job is gone?
Well, in a layoff situation, companies are trying to figure out how to make the best of a bad business. So they're trying to treat the people humanely. Each person is told individually, usually by their boss, about the situation. That company is offering then that person severance to help them through the period of unemployment. Health insurance is usually continued through that period. They're offering outplacement to help that person shorten their time out of work and find a better job.
Let Dan Swinney respond to
what
you said thus far.
Let's go to Bonnie listening to us in Chicago on line one. Go ahead.
State Scott Wright was
education. Well, thank you for taking my call. Because, for example, in North Carolina, a community college president has the authority of the governor
when talking with a multinational about setting up a flow of educated students to provide entry-level workers. The same thing happens to some extent in Alabama. And so I think that's a huge variable that northern states and new cities have to react. We do live in knowledge.
So they give the ability of the schools to teach what the employers want?
Exactly. That's what we're doing in Austin and Northside of Chicago. It's really we're asking employers, what are the competencies you need in the schools?
A lot of principals play favorites.
We provide education that provides students with those competencies.
You know, I have a couple friends who are teachers. My mother's a retired teacher.
Yes, you cannot ignore the fact that the people down in Lincoln, Alabama have the Honda plant down there because it's a right to work.
And then my mother said, you know, and she says, if there's a problem with the child, it's good to have. There should be no issue with doing something like that. There's no, there should be no expectations of privacy in the classroom. You know, there's an improved protection for the child. There's no protection for an incompetent teacher. There's verification as to how good a teacher is doing.
Let's let people respond. Ralph, do you think you were picking on the teachers union before? Do you think the teachers union would go for that?
Absolutely not. But I think it's a noble concept, but it would only create another level of bureaucracy. And I'm not sure you'll get more accountability for who's going to pay for the cost of doing that. And then they probably have some union employees responsible for that would just increase the cost of education.
Emily in Knoxville, listening to us on WNOX, has a question. Emily, nice to have you with us tonight.
Yes, thank you. Thanks for taking my question. I heard you earlier as I was driving home speaking about Japan and the labor costs for production, sort of a keeping up with the Joneses with other countries as far as labor costs go. And I just wanted to mention that Japan does have a socialized health care system so that companies are not, they don't have to pay higher wages so that, or in health care benefits. And I just would like for you gentlemen to talk about that if you could for a bit.
John, I'll let you tackle that one first.
Certainly seems crazy that we put health care on our companies. No other country in the world does that. It's not part of the wage structure around the rest of the world. We need another solution there.
I agree. Don't you think, though, that does raise the cost of American products? And if we don't have that for our citizens and corporations?
Well, no question. It's a big deal how this country is going to pay for health care. Putting it through corporations when we know that then 50 million people don't have access to health insurance just isn't getting it done either way.
Good morning.
I understand them saying, should we bail the automobile industry out?
High priority.
The union this, the union that.
Really aggressively. Again, I think as a society, as an economy, we need to go to being a more productive society that's creating more wealth and is spread around the entire population.
But taking it out of the employer
You know, benefit program is, unions brought like working people to from middle class.
I think it's a good
class,
idea. I think it just makes it, makes it more efficient, makes it more uniform.
And you know, there just has to be a happy medium.
Ralph, 20 seconds
I
to you.
I think that the Heartland Institute is on record for supporting consumer-oriented health care, which would basically take the catastrophic portion of health care and take it away from the government.
We're going to have to say farewell because we're out of time. Our thanks to John Challenger for being with us. Dan Swinney, your email address quickly.
So that you don't really have one size.
Ralph Connor and Dan Swinney, thank you very much for joining us in hour number one. John Challenger, thank you very much for being with us as well. They will all be back for hour number two. And in hour number two on the radio version of our program, we're going to be joined by Verge Bernio. He is the mayor of Lansing, Michigan. This is one of the many cities throughout the United States that is really just fearful of the complete collapse of Detroit and the ramifications, the ripple effect of the Detroit bust. We're going to hear from him for a portion of our next hour. 1-800-723-8289 is the phone number. The phone calls remain open. If you're watching us on television, we'll see you next week. If you're listening to us on radio, we'll be back in a few minutes. Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Tonight featuring commentary by business consultant John Challenger, community turnaround specialist Dan Swinney, Ralph Connor of the Heartland Institute, and our special guest, Verge Bernio, who is the mayor of Lansing, Michigan. And cities with big automobile plants are bracing for job cuts across the country amid the automobile crisis. We will discuss that with the mayor of Lansing, Michigan, in just a few moments. But as Beyond the Beltway's Ben Stewart tells us, the impact of the debacle in Detroit may soon be felt across the United States.
In crisis after crisis during recent months, we've seen how national headlines can impact American towns and cities. The housing crisis has sent home sales to their lowest level since 1991, and turmoil at the big three automakers, GM, Ford, and Chrysler, is being felt in towns across the U.S. The New York Times on Saturday reported mounting debts at one dealership in Quincy, Florida. That dealer is not alone. The National Automobile Dealers Association predicts about 900 of America's more than 20,000 new car dealers will go out of business this year. That number could head into the thousands next year. According to the Labor Department, 20,000 employees at dealerships lost their jobs in October alone. While auto executives ask for a bailout from Washington, the Times reports that federal cash might come too late for some dealers. This points to a widely felt national impact from the auto crisis. Cities like Lansing and Flint, Michigan, centers of the auto industry, will almost certainly see job losses. And with dealerships closing nationwide, what ails Detroit will affect other cities as well. But to what extent? How will the Detroit ripple effect change those cities and the lives of people who depend on the auto industry? From Beyond the Beltway, I'm Ben Stewart.
And joining us now from his home in Lansing, Michigan, is the mayor of that city, Verge Bernio. Mr. Bernio, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
My pleasure, Bruce. Thanks for having me.
Let us begin by asking you the $64 million question, and that is, if the big three automakers don't get that bailout from Washington, what happens in your view, in your city, and how quickly does it manifest itself?
Well, not to be melodramatic, it will be catastrophic. It will be an economic tsunami for Michigan and, of course, for Lansing. You know, we've been trying to diversify our economy. The whole state has for years. Since I was a kid starting out, I've always been interested in politics. I've heard our successive governors talking about diversifying our economy. And then, of course, when I became mayor 3 years ago, my top priority was to continue to try to diversify. We call it the three-legged stool of our economy, which is basically cars, capital, campus. We're the state capital city. We have Michigan State University just down the road. That's the campus. And then, of course, the cars, General Motors. General Motors used to employ about 30,000 people directly. Now they employ about 6,000 directly. But the indirect effect is for every one job in the auto industry, it's estimated there's another 7.5 jobs that are spinoff. And so it's not just, Bruce, I think it's important for your listeners, it's not just what happens in Lansing and Michigan, because we are diversifying. It would be devastating, but you know, it would be bad for the whole country to lose the big three. There's a reason why the Chrysler company years ago was bailed out 30 years ago by the federal government. And by the way, that loan was fully paid back. That was a good deal for taxpayers. They were paid back early and they were paid back in full. 30 years of productivity from Chrysler. The auto industry has done so much for so many. I feel strongly this is an industry worth saving, and I think people should consider that 7.5 job ripple effect. There's 3 million jobs that will be affected across this country. It could push us from a recession to a depression. There are a lot of reasons to save this vital aspect of manufacturing in this country.
Mr. Mayors, there are many people listening to this interview this evening. In fact, in the first hour of our program, a couple of the guests who share this microphone with me this evening suggested that maybe the best thing that would happen would be that there would be a reorganization, there would be a bankruptcy, and that really that unless there is radical changes within the operation by the management of these companies are going nowhere, and money that may come to you in January will be gone by March.
I disagree with that vehemently, and I ask you and your listeners to carefully consider what I have to say. Chapter 11, reorganization, is just the same as Chapter 7. They may as well declare bankruptcy and go belly up. Nobody's going to buy a car from a bankrupt auto company. People want to know that their car company is going to be there, that the warranty is going to be there. Now, I'm not saying that the auto companies haven't made mistakes, but the reality is that our auto companies today compete not with other companies, but they compete with countries. I got to tell you, I've been to Korea. I went to our sister city there. They have a Hyundai plant in our sister city, Asan, South Korea. And I can tell you, you know, we used to say what's good for GM is good for America. We used to say that. In Korea, I can assure you, they still say what's good for Hyundai is good for Korea. The company and the country are in lockstep. And when you talk about the country's research and development strategy, you talk about their investment strategy, their healthcare policy, their currency manipulation, it's all designed to help the company. What do we do to help our companies besides saddle them with environmental regulations, much of which I agree with, by the way, the environmental stuff? But our companies are going greener. I ask you to consider, our companies have been turning the corner. Do you know GM makes more hybrid vehicles today than any other company on the planet? GM outsold Toyota last year. GM made the Motor Trend Car of the Year last year, the Cadillac CTS, right here in Lansing, Michigan. This is not your father's automobile company. These companies have turned the corner. If you have not taken a good look at Ford, Chrysler, and GM lately, I invite you to do so. They are not in their death throes. They are not in the final hour. What put them under was the walloping blow from Wall Street. It was the credit crunch that really put them in a bad way. They were changing, becoming cleaner and greener, and doing so many things differently.
Mr. Mayor, we have callers on the line. Let's go to Tim in Redding, California, listening to us on KQMS. Go ahead. You're on the air, Tim.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I believe, having been a member of a union before for the Teamsters, that the union and the Big Three, the management, are both to blame. Reason being is they were riding on their economic success for many, many years, so people forget that management has to okay the contract as well as the union, so the union is not strictly to blame. However, if you recall, a guy by the name of Edward Deming many years ago in the early 1950s brought his total quality management and Kaizen continuous improvement to the Big Three. They laughed at him. He brought it over to Japan, and they embraced that business model, and that's why they're the number one auto industry automaker in the world, is because they believe in continuous improvement, total quality management, make things better, continue to improve. We did not do that. We got fat, sassy, and arrogant about our production, and this is where we are today, and I do not believe we should bail these people out. There is no way my tax dollars should go to bail out a company that is poorly managed and misrun.
Let's let the mayor respond. Go ahead, Mayor.
Well, Tim makes a valid point with Deming, of course, but he's dead wrong as far as the bailout. I suppose it's a good investment to bail out AIG for $150 billion with no strings attached, or some of these other Wall Street concerns. You know, Wall Street and Washington, their two biggest products are hysteria and hot air. The automobile company actually produces something. These are real people all across the country that produce real products that are in demand. The fact of the matter is,
but you want us to bail you out after, when you've known that this is coming. They did not judge their competition the way they should have. They neglected the competition. Everybody did. The Big Three, they put themselves where they are, including the union. You guys should have streamlined. You guys should have been more successful in judging
the
competition and looking what the consumer was buying. And you guys didn't do that, and this is where you are today.
And I'm sure the management at Citigroup is so much better and so much more worthy of a bailout. The fact of the matter is the automobile companies, the executives have made mistakes. There's a corporate culture there, like a lot of corporate culture. But I'll tell you something, Tim, you and a lot of other Americans who have questions about this, let me tell you something. The number one thing that the auto companies are guilty of in this country is being the last great patriotic company in this country. They invested in this country instead of outsourcing and sending all the jobs overseas. That's the number one thing they're guilty of. That's the
Mr. Mayor, stay on the line. We want to continue our conversation. 1-800-723-8289. We have a fired up mayor of Lansing, Michigan, Mayor Bernero, and we'll hear from him when we roll on. From Laguna Beach, California, to Lansing, Michigan, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. The mayor of Lansing, Michigan, joins us, Virge Bernero, and Mr. Mayor, our guest in the studio here in Chicago, Dan Swinney, has a question for you.
Yeah, Mayor, I'm honored to be on this call with you. I also support the idea of a bailout, but it depends on the terms. I mean, I don't want to use the word bailout. I think there's an opportunity for public investment if the terms are right. And I believe that it should be, as Bruce said, the company should be radically restructured. My question to you is, would you be in favor of recognizing government investment as an equity investment in the company, in a restructuring of the board of directors to include the UAW, to include leading environmental thinkers, to include government specialists, so we could transform this company from a car company to a transportation company that was world class?
Sounds like a very thoughtful approach, Dan. I appreciate that. I wouldn't have any problem with any of that. You know, I think the mistake that the federal government has made, and I think that they've lost some confidence in the American people, is with these bailouts, and that's what I'll call them, of the Wall Street concerns with no strings attached. And we see the money being used for parties and whatever else. Of course, the corporate executives didn't help themselves by flying in on corporate jets. Things like that have to be taken care of. The corporate jets should be grounded and sold. We have to, you know, get rid of some of that corporate culture, bring in some of that Deming culture that Tim was talking about. But, yes, there should be conditions. Absolutely. And I look at this as an investment. And, again, I remind Americans that the Chrysler so-called bailout investment, the Chrysler loan was fully paid back. So, you know, this is an industry. I'll stack up, you know, Tim wanted to be critical of the auto industry. There's plenty to be critical of. But the reality is I'll stack up the record of the auto industry against the record on Wall Street and Washington any day of the week. These are real companies that produce real things. And the other thing I would say, and I'd be interested in your opinion, Dan, is when I compare our companies to some of the companies overseas, including China, where they're making 10 million cars a year, by the way, we should recognize the threat coming out of China. The competition, you know, we're competing with countries. We're competing with companies that are subsidized in a myriad of ways. Whereas here in this country, we tend to take a capitalist approach, this approach that there has to be this demarcation between government and business, and that would be great, except that the free market, the world market that we compete in, is not this very clearly defined free market system.
John Challenger
puts us at a disadvantage.
Mr. Mayor, John Challenger is here. He is an outplacement consultant. He's got a question or comment for you.
So my concern, Mayor, is what do we do if we're in the same position 3 months from now or 6 months from now? So if we give these companies the money, whether it's bailout or investment, and we find that we're in the same position 3 months from now, how do we handle it then? Do we say we've got more money, or are you willing to say we're going to do it once and it's the last time? If the situation arises again, because many people think these car companies just can't get past the competition right now the way they're structured. If we're in the same position next summer, what do we do then?
Well, we simply cannot afford to fail. So Dan's right. It's got to be done right.
But what if we do? What if we're in the same position 6 months from now?
Look, I'm not just speaking as mayor of Lansing, Michigan, believe it or not. And I'm not just speaking as the son of an auto worker. My dad retired after many years from GM. But look, I really am speaking as an American here. I don't believe we can afford to let our manufacturing prowess slip to this degree. And I also don't believe that our companies are competing on an equal basis with other private sector companies.
But you're not answering my question.
No, I'm answering your question. The question is, we cannot afford to fail. The question is,
what if it does come?
It's not just economic security, it's national security. Let's not forget that the auto industry, they were an important part of the arsenal of democracy that helped us win World War II. I don't believe that we can just allow our manufacturing prowess to fall by the wayside and hope that in some future conflict, God forbid that there's a war where we need guns and tanks and armaments, that we can rely on Korea or Japan or China to produce that for us.
So maybe we should turn them into military companies. Maybe we, if that's the argument, then we should turn them into military companies instead of car companies.
Well, and look, what Dan is talking about is turning them into transportation companies. And you know what? We need transportation. We need better rail lines. You know, we don't just need better highways. We need better mass transit.
Now, Ralph Connor is here. He's with the Heartland Institute, Mayor, and he thinks that there's been way too much emphasis on manufacturing. He thinks American manufacturing is dead. Ralph?
Well, I don't think it's dead, but what I'm saying is there's a process among economists called creative destruction, which asks us to look at the reality of where is the marketplace going with this. Is it going to require that all the automobile companies become war to the government? Are they going to be job-creating enterprises, or are we going to be in a situation where they can only make it with government subsidies? Are we going to have to say, let's make a Volt electric car and then pay every American $7,500 if they'll buy one? What happened to the market that says, well, Americans want to buy it because it's a good product? Americans want to buy it because it's competitive. How do you make it competitive again?
I think it's free marketeers like you that helped put us in this position. You guys that wanted us to have unilateral disarmament to essentially export our standard of living. Thank you so much. You know what? GM is supposed to – are the big three supposed to apologize? Is my dad supposed to apologize because him and my mom, God bless him, were able to raise five kids and we actually got to go to the dentist? We actually got to have good teeth because of the health care that UAW had negotiated? I'm not going to apologize. You know, the unions and GM and the big three helped create the middle class in this country. But people like you who see it as a free market and all these rigid rules, but you don't apply the rules to China and Korea and Japan. That's where the whole thing falls down, because it is not an equal playing field. And I'm sorry, but I'm going to stand up for the working men and women of this country who work hard every day, and they deserve a decent wage, and they don't have to apologize for getting health care benefits as well.
Dan.
Yeah, you know, I think, Virge, I agree. I think that in the last 30 years, this whole economy allowed the casino operators, the gamblers, the bettors, to take over our culture, our economic culture, and we're paying a terrible cost for it now. Now we have an opportunity to intervene in an effective, responsible way with government, with labor, and working with business in what we call a high road partnership to restructure these companies dramatically so they can compete in the global market as well as better serve our society.
That would be great. You know, but these free marketeers, what kills me, you know, I've been to Korea. I was in Taiwan. They have national health care, and you can poo-poo it if you want, but, you know, that's a big part of what the UAW negotiated for, a big part of my life, an important part of my life that my dad and the UAW and GM provided for was excellent health care. And for that, they're supposed to be guilty. For that, that makes them uncompetitive. Well, you better believe that's part of what makes them uncompetitive, because in Japan and in Korea, they have national health care. It is not a concern that Hyundai has to be worried about. And the environmental regulations are not as tough as they are here. And when those free trade arrangements were negotiated, all of that should have been worked into the deal. We should have been competing on a level playing field. But our standard of living has been exported continuously. And now you want to kill the auto industry and blame the UAW. Well, you know what? The UAW recently made historic concessions, and we have a long-time history here in Lansing of the UAW working hard and working with GM and using some of that Deming philosophy. That's how you get to the Motor Trend Car of the Year. And by the way, the Chevy Malibu was the North American car of the year. And by the way, the Insurance Institute of Highway Safety just came out with their studies of the safest vehicles. And guess what? The big three dominated the top of the list. So we're producing great cars. We're producing greener cars than ever before. Don't tell me that we're in the death throes. We were just on the way to turning the corner, becoming cleaner and greener, when this walloping blow was dealt to us by Wall Street. The Wall Street wizards are what brought us here, and now they still want to sting the praises of the free market, which doesn't even exist on the worldwide level.
Let's go to Patrick in Fresno, California, listening to us on KMJ.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm an engineer. I've been in the industry a number of years, and what I've seen, not just with the car companies, but with many large publicly held companies, is just a chronic short-term thinking, and I think a lot of it is actually driven by Wall Street. Wall Street is constantly pressuring companies. What are you going to do to get your stock price up? What are you going to do to make money this year? And look back at what's happened in Wall Street. It seems like going back a couple of decades now, it's a chronic get-rich-quick mentality. The mortgage mess was speculative investing, get-rich-quick ideas. WorldCom and Enron, the dot-com boom and bust, the corporate raiders of the 80s, you know, Wall Street seems like they drive a lot of these problems. Now, in fairness to them, I think individual investors drive a lot of those problems, too. Everybody wants double-digit returns on their mutual funds every year. And I think what would help a lot is change the capital gains tax laws so that the longer an investment was held, the less the tax on it. If you hold the stock for 6 months and sell it for a profit, you pay a substantial tax. You hold it for 5 or 10 years, you should pay no tax on it.
Patrick, Dan Swinney's got a response to that.
Yeah, Patrick, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think, you know, what has driven this crisis is Wall Street. And I think what we need to do in these companies is begin to diversify those who are investing in the companies. And we have to have investors who actually have a vested long-term interest. The UAW should be given equity shares in that company but for their concessions they gave because they have a long-term interest in the development of the company. Same if the government – and again, I don't think the government should be throwing money at this problem. But if it makes an investment, it should be there to – it should be an informed investment to ensure the long-term stability in the transformation of this company.
Ralph Connor.
Number one, I think the caller needs to reconsider the capital gains issue. Those taxes should actually be cut. The incoming administration has been flirting with the idea of increasing capital gains and also substantially increasing the dividends rate on taxation of those who are selling stocks. So I think those things need to be reconsidered.
Mr. Mayor, 30 seconds in closing remarks to you. Why should people care?
Well, the caller is right in line, right on target, by the way, and Ralph is out to lunch. Look, this isn't just a Lansing problem, a Michigan problem. This is America's manufacturing base. This is the manufacturing heartland. You know, this is the manufacturing prowess of this country. Can we afford to throw it out the window? There's huge economic security issues. Should there be conditions to the loan? Of course there should be conditions. Unlike the bailouts that have been given to Wall Street, where they've just been giveaways, billions and billions of dollars with no strings attached, this should have specific strings and specific conditions. We should reform the corporate culture, but this is an auto industry that is worth investment. You look at the Chrysler investment of 30 years ago, it paid off. It was paid in full, it was paid early, and we got 30 years of productivity from Chrysler.
Mr. Mayor, we're going to interrupt you, and I'm going to suggest that the next time the big three go to Washington, that's this coming week, they should take you with us.
Thank you very much.
You're terrific. The mayor of Lansing, Michigan, Virge Bernero, has been our guest. I'm Bruce Dumont, coming to you live from Chicago. 1-800-723-8289 is the phone number. From Spokane, Washington to Youngstown, Ohio, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us tonight on America's great radio stations, as well as now America's two great satellite radio companies. We're on Sirius 110, POTUS 110 on Sirius, and also on XM Radio, we're on POTUS 130. So we probably have a lot of people listening to us via satellite radio tonight. If you're listening to us on Sirius, you're probably hearing us for the first time. And this is a serious show that it's been on since 1980, and it's nice to have you with us tonight. John Challenger is here. He is the CEO of Challenger Gray and Christmas. That is a global outplacement consultancy that pioneered outplacement as an employer-paid benefit in the 1960s. He's a graduate of Harvard University. He is active in the World President's Organization, the President's Committee, Steering Committee of the Council on Foreign Relations, and is the president and board member of the Japan-America Society of Chicago. Also joining us this evening is Dan Swinney. He is the executive director of the Center for Labor and Community Research, and they've come up with a variety of new innovative ways to deal with the issues of manufacturing in the inner cities of America, creator of an organization or a school called Austin Polytechs Program, which the president-elect thinks is a wonderful idea and wants to replicate around the United States. And also joining us this evening from the Heartland Institute, which is a libertarian think tank, is Ralph W. Connor. He's their legislative manager. And also, once upon a time, he was the mayor of a small town, Maywood, Illinois, where a company closed and you lost a lot of jobs. What did you do about it, Mr. Mayor?
Well, as the mayor of Lansing, my counterpart, had said earlier, we had to diversify. And we have to realize that the manufacturing industry is not what it used to be, and that a lot of jobs are going to be in the knowledge economy and the telecom economy and healthcare. And we have to start looking for ways to bring in the new industries, service industries, and knowledge industries.
So what did you do in Maywood? Don't you have a lot of hospitals there?
Well, basically, we tried to attract the racetrack is not really in Maywood proper, although it's called Maywood Park. But what we did was we tried to attract more retail in order to bring in more sales taxes so we could lower the real estate tax rate. We tried to invest in more media-related businesses and businesses that could serve the hospital complexes by providing, you know, uniforms. We attracted CentOS into the community, which was a uniform people, and they service a lot of hospitals. So we tried to build on the symbiosis between existing industry and also deal with other regional communities to try to play off of their industries to see if we could attract people to service their industry.
During the break at the top of the hour, before we brought Mayor Bernero into our conversation, there was a good, lively discussion during that news break, as there frequently is, about basically the premise that you laid out at the beginning of the program, Dan, in which you were saying that manufacturing is alive and well. And, John, you were challenging that. You think that putting all the eggs in the manufacturing basket, as Dan has suggested, which I don't think he's implying, but I think he may have suggested that, make that challenge, Mr. Challenger.
I don't think that the 21st century is going to be about manufacturing in the U.S. I do think the manufacturing itself, its strongest area of focus needs to be on high-tech manufacturing, knowledge jobs in manufacturing. But our economy, in fact, even today, with what's happening in the markets, is telling us where the future is going to be. The kinds of companies that are doing well despite the recession right now, the industries that are doing well, are healthcare, energy, education, and perhaps international global business. Our economy in the 21st century has to – and maybe technology as well. So our economy for the future and where education needs to go is towards those industries, because that's what the market's telling us.
But wasn't Dan, you were talking about energy manufacturing, right? I mean, that's part of your defend your position here.
No, that's absolutely right. In healthcare – the highest end of that of healthcare is in the manufacturing sector. It's making MRI machines. It's making implants, which are very precise machine products. That's where we should be competing. In energy, wind turbines are a huge multi-billion-dollar market. And right now in Chicago, with the initiative of the mayor and the Chicago Manufacturing Renaissance Council, we're now energetically working to build a supply chain for those wind turbine producers, and we can expand jobs that way. In technology, 80% of new technology is used in manufacturing. And most people – and so what I'm challenging is the conventional wisdom that has, you know, sort of counterposed technology and manufacturing when exactly the opposite is the case.
I think that's and it can be done in the United States at U.S. wages? I mean,
absolutely.
Is this expansion something that is a boon to unions? Are you talking about unionized work or non-unionized work?
Well, I'm talking about both, but it's a boon to the whole society. When we're talking about advanced manufacturing, we have lost the competitive advantage to make simple products that required low-skilled labor. That's a fact, and that's not coming back. But, you know, we're in the city of Chicago. 100 years ago, we had Daniel Burnham, who had designed our city. He said, make no small plans. The question of can we rebuild our manufacturing sector that has been savaged by Wall Street, as Tim pointed out or Patrick pointed out in our last episode, is a question of will and leadership. And I think President-elect Obama and I think the people in this room, if we choose to, can really rebuild the sector to be the global leader.
It seems to me that it's a corner, you know, of what the economy is going to be about. No question, important, and we want to have that strong high-tech manufacturing base. But think about healthcare. We're not talking really about makers of MRI machines to keep our 200 million workers going, 150 million workers right now in the economy going. Those are people working in hospitals and pharmaceutical companies and biotech companies, you know, and doctor's offices. I mean, those are the tens of thousands
of
jobs.
These are clerical jobs. Is that what you're
saying? No, certainly not, because
clerical
doctors, nurses, the people working in pharmaceutical companies, the researchers, all of the people that run those companies, that's not.
But you're talking
enough
about something that is both, you know, high-skilled, right, as well as low-skilled. I mean, if you walk into a doctor's office, there is the doctor who's gone to school for 16 to 20 years, and then there is the man or woman that's taking your Blue Cross card and writing it down.
We know those lower level or less skilled jobs that are service jobs, that are in-country jobs. They're not going to be moved. We're not going to go to a nurse, you know, somewhere else around the world, or even someone in a medical office. So those jobs are the ones that are going to stay here for the people, you know, who don't go out and get the kind of education that may lead to those high tech jobs.
But those are the lower rung jobs that you're talking about. What Dan I think is referencing is that we shouldn't totally give up on the fact that there are some blue collar, lower rung jobs that can still be done here.
But
not exclusively lower rung jobs.
No, they're not lower rung.
You think there's complicated jobs? And Ralph, your point was that it's all about tourism and retail.
No, not exactly. I think that there is an energy economy, and that energy economy. Economy means jobs that are green jobs in the sense that they're based upon creating the master resource that runs a society: energy, whether it's electricity, whether it's coal, whether it's deep geothermal, or whether it's offshore drilling in order to say that we need more domestic oil supplies. That's the challenge of the future, is the energy watershed. Jobs be created not by wind and solar, because you're not going to have that many jobs in wind and solar, even if you subsidize $150 billion.
How do we know that?
Because they will generate less than 5 or 10% of the total energy needs of the United States
But you have to build the windmills, right?
Pickens recently experimented with a whole project to invest billions of dollars in so-called wind turbine technology. The thing fell flat because the investors finally realized they weren't going to get the return on their investment from that particular technology.
Let's go to Phil in Youngstown, Ohio, listening to us on WKBN. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good evening, Bruce. I would just like to ask some of your guests, especially Mr. Challenger, who, you know, I could see has a special interest in all of this hot placement. The way this situation is going with the auto industry, how do they expect to pay for all this health care, this burgeoning health care industry, regardless of what rung these workers are on? If people don't have the insurance, and the companies aren't there that are even willing to pay for this insurance.
Well, again, if we build a healthcare industry just like we build an auto industry, that's what happened in the 20th century, is that everybody wanted to buy cars. Now we have a whole population that wants to buy healthcare. So the more people we put into healthcare, the more people then have access to healthcare. So it does seem to me that the 21st century is going to be a lot more in the U.S. about the healthcare industry than it is going to be about the auto industry.
One other thing, too, all the help that we give to Toyota, Honda, and Nissan, the foreign transplants that are over here, and recently I know Honda made a big splash in Indiana, and of course Toyota in San Antonio and down in Mississippi, and all that they've done in the past years, it seems to be okay to go out and give them low-interest loans and property tax abatements and grants to pay for worker retraining and so on and so forth. I really find it hard to understand why we can't swallow, trying to help a Ford, GM, or Chrysler when it's okay for these people who have a lot of cash reserves on hand to be getting such from us U.S. citizens.
Well, it does seem to me that the auto companies ought to be going to those local governments, and saying, what can you do, to help us? We want to come build in your area. We're going to create jobs, and we're going to build, auto plants that American, that produce cars that Americans want to buy.
Yeah, they could be building these cars in Japan and Korea. They came to the United States. Granted, they may have gotten some boost from the local economy, but they're making cars, and those cars are costing less to build than they were in Detroit. So who's the bad guy here? Are you there? Phil, are you gone? Phil is gone. So we'll let Phil think of what the answer is and call us back. 1-800-723-8289. We got lots more callers, including those on the road, listening to Beyond the Beltway from coast to coast and border to border, back with their calls when we roll on from Chicago. From Boise, Idaho to Birmingham, Alabama, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. And before we take another call, let me just make a correction. John Challenger is the past president of the Japan-America Society of Chicago. We don't want to get the current president looking daggers at you the next time you meet over lunch or sushi or wherever you meet. Let's go to calls. Let's go to our friend Crosby, listening to us in Birmingham, Alabama, on WAPI, where there's probably still dancing in the streets because Bama really rolled. Tide rolled yesterday over Auburn.
Yeah, my brother
Auburn.
Played for Alabama back in the 60s. He's still floating.
Can you start again, Crosby? We missed the beginning.
I'm sorry.
Of your conference.
I said my brother played for Alabama.
Oh, he did.
Back in the 60s with Coach Bryant.
Well, I'm sure he's got a lot of interesting stories. But that state, I'm sure there probably wasn't anybody on the roads in Alabama yesterday when that
came. Not a lot of traffic. Not a lot of traffic yesterday.
And not a lot of crime.
Yeah. I think one of my comments may have been addressed while I was trying to get through. So please excuse me if I do repeat something. The mayor of Lansing made reference to the Chrysler bailout.
Yes.
Chrysler loan. In 1980, that coincided with Ford firing Lee Iacocca. Lee Iacocca had the idea for the minivan. Ford rejected the minivan. Iacocca took the minivan concept and engineers to Chrysler, and that was the primary savior of Chrysler Corporation. Also, in 1980, the following did not exist. BMW, South Carolina, Kia, Georgia, Honda, Hyundai, Mercedes-Benz, Alabama, Nissan, Toyota, Mississippi, and in about 2 years, Volkswagen, Chattanooga, Tennessee. All of these companies could have invested their money in Michigan, chose not to because the cost imposed by the state of Michigan on doing business is prohibitive. With respect to auto manufacturing in particular. Similarly, Toyota announced 2 years ago it would make the Prius in California. California's economy has reached the point that Toyota this past summer announced it will build the Prius in Mississippi. My point is that just by subsidizing the big three, that ignores all the other automotive jobs around the country that are not part of GM, Chrysler, and Ford. Until the economic policies of Michigan, Ohio, California change, they're not going to attract businesses, especially manufacturing jobs. Finally, please, real quick.
Let's let Dan Swinney respond to what you've said thus far, and then we'll go back to you.
Yeah, okay. One of the variables I think the southern states got right was education. Because, for example, in North Carolina, a community college president has the authority of the governor when talking with a multinational about setting up a flow of educated students to provide entry-level workers. I think the same thing happens to some extent in Alabama.
It does.
And so I think that's a huge variable that northern states and new cities have to react. I mean, we do live in the knowledge economy.
So they give the ability of the schools to teach what the employers want?
Exactly. And that's what we're doing in Austin on the west side of Chicago. It's really we're asking employers, what are the competencies you need in your schools? To do your work, and then we provide education that provides students with those competencies. It's as simple
as
that.
Quick response, Ralph, from you, and then back to Crosby.
You cannot ignore the fact that the people down in Lincoln, Alabama, have the Honda plant down there because it's a right-to-work state. And the influence of labor in all of these, deliberations is a major factor. You can't ignore that.
Well,
back to you, Crosby.
All right. Real quick, GM announced it would expand its automotive engineering department in China. Chrysler is looking at establishing an automotive engineering office in China as well as in Europe. The Ford World Car will be manufactured in Mexico, not in Michigan. And Chrysler is looking at, one, manufacturing a Jeep model in India, and two, establishing a business relationship with the third largest automotive manufacturer in China, Chery, Chery, I would say, to import Chery automobiles to the United States. Therefore, engineering graduates from Michigan, Michigan State, University of Alabama, or Georgia Tech, that want to pursue a career in automotive engineering are seeing some of those jobs now being exported as well. The country has to become more of an intellectual management. We're 0.3 billion people. There are 2.4 billion people side by side, India and China. we need to look at them as not just competitors, but as partners that we can provide technology and management advice and be successful. We cannot be...
Crosby, on that note, listen, I thank you very much. It was a very articulate call. We do appreciate it, but we do have Todd who's standing by. Actually, he's driving by. He's on I-90 listening to us on WLS, a former Teamster. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning. Good evening, Bruce. I just wanted to say I understand them saying, should we bail the automobile industry out? The union this, the union that. But, you know, you want to be sympathetic to the whims of the company, but you see these outrageous salaries that these CEOs make. And, you know, unions brought working people to middle class, and they've all but destroyed that. And you know, there just has to be a happy medium. And I always said when you're manufacturing a product on a line and you can't afford to buy that product you're manufacturing, that is pitiful. And
all right, on that note, Todd, we're going to have to say farewell because we are out of time. Our thanks to John Challenger for being with us, Dan Swinney. Dan Swinney, your email address quickly.
dswinney, dswinney at clcr.org.
And Ralph Connor, we thank you very much from the Heartland Institute. This program is a Genevieve production. Our thanks to Tom Veracruz and Ben Stewart for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week at the same time, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.